make sense of these readings today, unfortunately, we have to give make a historical point as well as a homiletic one. The Jews, unlike the Greeks, understood human life very differently. They didn't see it as a composite, human beings as a composite of body and soul. If you're a human being, you're simply a breathing body. And if the breath went away, then you were worm food, and nothing was left. Nothing. And that was, you can read the Hebrew Bible and see over and over again that this is reiterated. There's something called Sheol, this kind of misty, vague space where some vestige of the human was to go, but they didn't have any identity, didn't have a name, didn't have a voice, was nobody really. Until about the year 150, what was happening then? Well, the Jews, for most of their history, had been conquered people. The Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Greeks. And that brings us up to the time of the book of Maccabees. So finally, at the time of a guy named Antiochus Epiphanes, who had inherited the empire of Alexander the Great, who had conquered, as you know, most of the known world at that time, he died, and his kingdom was split up among his generals. And finally, a Syrian general named Antiochus Epiphanes took over what we call Palestine today. And for reasons that are never entirely clear, he hated the Jews and literally wanted to exterminate the Jews from the face of the earth, wanted to simply make them disappear. So he had them eat pork, had them burn the Torah, built gyms, which in the normal Greek fashion people exercise in the nude. And for the Jews, that was horrendous. This is all in the book of Maccabees. So then we had this terrible problem with this family, the Maccabee family. They said, listen, we're not going to put up with this stuff. So they revolted. And for the first time in centuries, the Jews actually won. They beat back the armies of Antiochus, and for about 90 years, until Julius Caesar showed up, around the year 53, they were a free people. But then they had this terrible theological problem. Here are all these dead Maccabees and all these dead people who fought for the cause of God. Now, the Jews' fundamental understanding of God was that God was, above all, steadfastly loving. You hear that phrase over and over and over in the Psalms and all the readings from the Hebrew Bible. That's the first hallmark of who God was. God was steadfastly loving. So we have a problem. Here's this steadfastly loving God, and here we got all these corpses who died defending the cause of God. And it's that precisely at this point in their history that the Jews came up with this notion of the resurrection of the body. It had to be a resurrection of the body because there was nothing like souls running around among the Jews. So it had to be a physical resurrection. So it's always a resurrection of the body. And it's out of this that this big debate between the Sadducees and the Pharisees and Jesus on this point took the Pharisaic point of view, that there was a resurrection of the body. God was going to be faithful. So it's very important for us, I think, in the 21st century, who are often enough haunted by the thought of death, that they believed in the resurrection of the dead, not because they were scared of dying and disappearing, because that's what they all believed up until the year 150. It was God's fidelity that was in play here. God's faithfulness. God will not abandon us, even when we had finished our physical lives, our mortal lives. God would still be with us. And that's, of course, the religious point of a belief in the resurrection of the dead, something that came very late into Jewish thought, together with a belief in angels and demons, which the Jews borrowed from the Persians. But this is what we have to hang on to. God is faithful. God is steadfastly loving, despite everything. And this is a massive pivot on which the whole notion of the resurrection of the dead hangs. Not just because I'm scared of dying. That's beside the point. That God will still be with us, despite everything. Despite the fact that we become worm food, apparently, after we're dead. God is steadfastly loving. And that's why it's the Sadducees who bring up this kind of goofy example of this woman Mary. Because that was the law, in fact, called the the Levirate law. That if a guy died with his wife having no children, then his brother had to marry her. So we get this cockamamie idea of seven brothers, you know, this serial marriages on the part of this woman. The point being, of course, that they wanted to show that this Pharisaic view, which Jesus shared, was nutty. He said, no, folks. That after death, and this is the wonderful image that emerges out of this, everybody's going to be married to everybody. What we hope for a marriage to be, namely for two people to grow absolutely transparent to each other, by the grace of God, we'll all become transparent to each other. So the normal mortal bonds that hold us together are no longer in place. That's the kingdom of God, folks. That was the centerpiece of Jesus' belief, Jesus' preaching, Jesus' action. We human beings who are normally so wary of each other and cautious of each other, with each other, and even husbands and wives. I've known enough married couples and counseled enough married couples to know that that business of transparency is not some kind of immediate event, you know, as soon as they leave the church, you know, with all the blossoms and wedding music. No, it takes a lifetime for people to accomplish that. But that's what we're called to. That's our destiny as human beings. That's why God made us in the first place. To be in the wonderful world of St. Paul, members of each other.